Hello everybody, thanks for tuning in to the first episode of the Rain Matter podcast. The idea with this podcast is to talk to the brightest founders and VCs from the startup ecosystem. In the first episode, Nitin speaks to Vishwajit, the founder of Quicko, which is working on making taxation easy for individuals, traders and businesses. Let's listen in.
Hi, everyone. This is Nitin from Zerodha. I also run an initiative called Rain Matter, where we're partnering innovative startups who are trying to kind of grow the capital market ecosystem, help traders, investors. Today, we have Vishwajit, who's the founder at Quicko. Many years back, one of the big problems most traders, investors in India faced was filing taxes. And it's a small piece. I mean, it's actually a very important piece of the business, but most people forget. A lot of people think, you don't really have to file returns, right? It doesn't work that way. Everyone's required to file income tax returns, even if you make profits or you don't make profits. We caught up, Vishwajit and I think 2.5 years back, and we just loved the product Quicko had built by then already, right? And the product has evolved. It's become a much superior product. So today, if there's a trader, investor who's looking to file returns, I think the quickest and the easiest way to do it today is through Quicko. Thanks, Vishwajit, for joining. The idea of this conversation was to discuss your journey, your learnings, if you're seeing some kind of behavior, trader, investor behavior, good and bad, if there are bad, what can we do to fix it? And if there's good, I think it's good to be sharing with everyone who's going to watch this, right? And also, also hear a little bit about your business and your personal story as well, right? So thanks, Vishwajit. So how about starting with your background I don't know if I've asked this question before, but so it'll be interesting to know a little bit of your life story. How did you end up at Quicko and then starting Quicko?
Awesome. Nitin, thanks. First of all, thanks very much. In fact, I should be doing this. There's a lot more to be learned from you than we are just starting out. I think you have had this journey. We are just beginning at the beginning and end of this journey. But let me first of all clear it out. I am with everyone else. I hate filing income tax returns as much as everyone else does. But I mean, taxes is an important part of, democracy. And that's how we do nation building together. And it's one of those necessary evils. There are different ways to do it. I mean, we can debate the whole day about it. What our objective always has been at Quicko is how can we simplify it for our users, right? And Nitin, I've always worked in fintech. I started my career at Fidelity, which pioneered personal financial investing in US market with, 401ks. At one point, Magellan by Peter Thiel was one of the biggest, largest mutual fund. So that's where I started. And I always got fascinated by technology and finance. So my second job was also technology and finance at Deutsche Bank, mostly post the 2008 financial crisis. Every bank was essentially building some sort of risk management tool, right? So I used my hands there as well, helped implement Dodd-Frank and Basel, some of those regulations. And while doing that, Nathan, I very quickly realized that, I really enjoyed solving problems, especially enjoyed solving problems related to finance using technology. And I thought I was good at communicating to all these stakeholders, whether it be business or technology. And so decided to move back to Ahmedabad, which is my hometown. And started founded Quicko. It wasn't a light bulb moment. Started building out a lot of different calculators just to see how, because I was coming back to India after almost 10 years. So I didn't know where we were in terms of, market penetration, internet penetration, mobile devices. So just, started building out a lot of calculators.
Which year was
this? This is back in 2014-15.
And what is your background as in? What do you do in college?
So I did bachelor's in computer science and then later on also did master's in computer science from Rochester. It's one of those upstate New York schools, very cold weathers. So so that has been the journey. I think a very important question that I get asked very frequently, right, is, dude, you got to move to Bangalore. And I think there's some similarities there, right? I always wonder, Nitin, how did you end up building India's largest brokerage out of Bangalore, right? It's counterintuitive. I go to Lower Parel, all this, fancy offices and meetings. And I wonder, Zerodha is absolutely, counterintuitive, because we have a team sits out of Zerodha office, and it's a very different environment. Yeah. So, tell us a little bit more about that? I mean, why Bangalore? Why not? At no point did it occur to you, when you had money, let's go to Mumbai and rock the town.
I mean, I Bangalore is where I've lived through my life, and I love the city. So. It was just, so I started my career here, right? As in, I had a tumultuous, like a roller coaster kind of a year, career. So it was, when we started Zerodha, it was like a natural extension to be here. And it didn't make any sense to be in Bombay for any particular reason, because the thing is, at Zerodha till date, we haven't hired a single person, like a senior person from another brokerage firm. Right? As in, there was like, so it's all built by folks who came without any baggage of being in another brokerage firm. And that's why I think we are a little different compared to competition. So, like with you as well, right? As in a startup coming out of Ahmedabad, a fintech startup is not, heard that often, but it's quite cool. Like I remember you telling me that Ahmedabad is the hub of chartered accountants. Your decision of getting to Ahmedabad, was it because of that, or was it because it's your hometown?
I'm a Gujarati, you guess. So, of course, you want to be amidst talent pool, right? And I always tell people that we are not a kind of an online a tech company, a chartered accountancy firm in disguise of a tech company. I come from technology background, and we always, if not this, we would be solving some other problem using the technical skills that we have acquired as a team. And it just happens to be that, Ahmedabad is hub, just like Kota is hub for, competitive exams, and Ahmedabad is hub for, chartered accountancy and company secretaries. And we end up finding a lot of great talent that comes out of. In fact, this year, the topper in CA exams is from Ahmedabad. So it really helps, to be amidst that talent pool that we can go tap into. But you are absolutely right. I mean, there are along the way, we're going to talk about, what are the challenges, starting a startup out of Ahmedabad is a metro, right? We are more than 80 million population now, but still considered tier two city in terms of, access to the startup ecosystem, or VCs and financing and things like that. So I would love to, because a lot of founders these days have those questions, because now we are seeing startups coming out of, a lot of tier two cities, Indore and Kanpur. And
remember, speaking to Harshil, etc., I think they came out of Jaipur.
So Razorpay started out of Jaipur. A lot of their early days were in Jaipur, yes.
Got it. So you're saying you came to India with no agenda. Like you just said, I want to get back to India. And you came here and you started off building calculators, like to make life easier for people filing tax returns, right?
Right. So, I have a young one just like you. So we wanted to, grow him up with along with the family. We live in a united family here. So that was the goal. Me just moving back was a kind of byproduct of that function. And when I moved back, I started building out a lot of calculators, not specifically income tax calculator, but you name it. We built insurance calculator, portfolio returns calculator, so it was a great way to get insights into different domains, who were the technology disruptors, who was getting funded. Also, what kind of excesses, like you said, you have often talked about NSE now as a platform, and how instrumental it was, and building out Zerodha. So we were looking for same kind of indicators, right? Whether government was pushing for an open ecosystem where, you know, third party developers like us can come in and, you know, take some of that burden, build products, USPs, value proposition around some of those problem statements.
So when you're building all of this, was there a monetary angle to this, or you're just building it for fun?
No, there was no monetary angle to it. I saw, but like I said, I came from Fidelity, a lot of personal financial planning background, right? So that side of Fidelity business is mostly advisory and, you know, how we can educate our target audiences better. So I came from that thought process. So kind of monetary, monetary angle, or, you know, how to monetize the product was never a goal. Until we realized that, you know, income tax was this problem statement, there weren't any technology disruptors solving that problem, right? We saw a lot of online to offline providers, but that we definitely knew wasn't the, you know, right way going forward. It looked like a right problem statement to solve. It's something that we also felt very passionate about, because you go on Facebook and you share your personal information, right? Your life story. You go on with your bank, you have your data relationship. But when you come to a tech platform, it's essentially a summary of your entire year, right? It's starting from who you are to, you know, where you work and how much money you make, to where do you invest. So you share all of that data, and it definitely, you know, to us, it occurred that we needed to educate users better, build interfaces to which they understand. Because mostly taxes are black box for a lot of people, right? And that is why it's such a taboo. People don't want to, it's not a coffee table discussion, how much you pay in taxes. Right. Except those Bollywood PR exercises where somebody says, Akshay Kumar paid 100 crores.
So you're saying, so this wasn't really your problem statement, right? Then Quico was, you know, you figured this was a problem statement by the users of all these calculators that you had built. Right. So when did that happen? When did you realize that, you know, you need to build something like Quico? What year was this?
Right. So this was back in 2015. So I moved back in 2014 for 6 to 8 months. I didn't know what to do. Rented premises, a couple of old friends, engineers that I knew of, gathered them together, and we started building these calculators. And in about 6 months time, we knew that we wanted to build Quico. And the problem statements that we wanted to solve.
Got it. And so when you say we, can you give some backgrounds and who are these?
So I think that's where I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, right? But in case of Quico, we have, several people who have been here since the beginning of the journey. I mean, Hiral, who has been our lead chartered accountant, she is a very popular on Quora, most viewed author when it comes to taxes. Sakshi again started since the beginning. Of course, I knew that I'm going to need some chartered accountants. So with a couple of friends like that and a couple of engineers that we hired very early, we started building out Quico. And I mean, that's something I always ponder upon. I mean, lately you've started telling, more of your story. There always comes a time where you get that opportunity. And what I see is, the same guys that started Zerodha 10 years back are still there, right? I see Nikhil and Nitin. I see Hanan and Austin and Venu and all these guys, Karthik and Kailash, right? How important do you think is retaining that core team? How do you do that, right? That's a problem statement that all of us founders face.
Right. You're throwing one back at me. Okay. So I think when building, like, see, I didn't know this. I think I accidentally learned it along the way. I think it's about getting people who believe in the problem, right? And what you're solving for, right? Because I think, I've seen founders attract people by paying more, etc., right? As in, that's very tough to, those kind of relationship which is getting built because of some monetary reasons are very tough to sustain in the long run, right? Oh. Because there is always going to be some opportunity that can tempt someone out of the relationship, right? So I think the reason we've all, I mean, not just the core team, but you know, if even the extended team, I think out of the first 100 who joined us, maybe 10 have been quit or asked to leave till they have quit or been asked to leave till late, right? And today, I think the biggest edge we have on our competition is that the fact that each of these people on our team are just so proficient at what they do, right? And so yeah, so I think it's about it's not an easy task, right? As in, like even if you've been able to, you know, keep someone who's a lead chartered accountant with you for 5 years, you've done something right. And because it's very tough in today's world to, you know, for someone who's really skilled in terms of chartered accountancy or being very active on social media and well known on social media to be staying with you for so long. So it's I don't know. I don't know what's the right answer to it, but I think it's about your team is really all that you have when you're running a business. So you need to take care of them as your family. Be honest, be constantly try to help them grow. And if they see that in you, good and bad times, I think those relationships last, you know. And like personally, I put team over money any day, you know. And that attitude has kind of maybe helped keep everyone together, right? It's actually the craziest thing is our tech team, which is like a superhuman 30-member team. I think one person has left till date in the last 6 years. And it's just quite crazy to have, you know, a team, like a tech team, just building products who are so proficient. Because in this business, I think you would also know, right? People who understand finance and technology, there are not too many out there.
Right.
And then, you know, if someone has spent 4 or 5 years in this industry while honing their technology skills, they just become superhuman of sorts, right? I've seen that, you know, like how, like Kay Kailash, who heads our tech, he's always been a superhuman even before he joined us. But all the teams, all the people he got under him, I've seen them evolve over the last 4 or 5 years. And they've just gotten better, you know, by every 6 months, they're so much better than before because... and because you're a small team, you're kind of working on multiple problems. You're not building one like button on, like, you know, one like button on Facebook, right? I mean, you're actually being part of a lot of discussions and conversations. So you are actually growing intellectually. Right. So, and also my attitude towards how teams have to be built has changed over the last 10 years. You know, if you were to ask me last 10 years back, I thought, putting people, you know, throwing people at problems will help solve the problem. I mean, that was the attitude I had, and which is old school kind of attitude. And that's changed completely. As in, now I'm like, people can't, you know, just throwing people can't solve any problems. Just to give an example, 2 years back, we were at 1,200 members as a team. We had, I think, 1.5 million customers. We are at 4.5 million customers today. We're an 1,100 member team. So we have actually shrunk in size in terms of the team while we have grown the business 3x, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah. So
no, it reminds me of one of your recent quotes. I don't know if you borrowed it from someone or not, but it's not about big beating small anymore, right? It's about fast beating slow. And I think that core team is a very integral part of it, right? Because you've been solving problem together, it intuitively comes to you, right? As to what your customer problem statements are, and you know, how fast you need to solve them. So a lot of time, ours is sometimes a seasonal business where, you know, a lot of people in India file taxes in the last few weeks, which is why historically we've heard about, you know, income tax department servers crashing down, stories like that. So we always feel that, you know, kind of we feel burnt out at the end of tax season, and we say we want to go on a vacation somewhere. And here we get on a call with Zerodha folks. And for you, every day is same, right? I mean, markets don't have cycles. I mean, there's some firefight happening every day. And there's somebody.
Just, you know, I don't think as a stockbroker, I should be hoping for it. But I hope that stock markets, you know, in a year has a 15-day off. You know, like, you know, even if it's not an off, market opens, the price remains the same during the day, right? Let people transact, but at one price, you know, let that price not change, because that price changing is such a I mean, you're in constant stress. Like, you know, like I'm talking to you right now, but somewhere in my back of my mind, I'm like, what's happening to the markets right now? Is it volatile? Is it, you know, is our platform okay and stuff like that? Right. But yeah, but coming, you know, this is something that I've asked you before as well, which is because it's so seasonal, what do you guys do the rest of the year? Right? You know, like, you know, so the tax filing season is maybe 2 months, right? As in 2 to 3 months.
Let me think about it. It's gonna in any way impact the fundraising rounds. No, I mean, we have continuously, you know, pondered that question as to, you know, of course, it feels nice to say that it's a seasonal business, but I mean, with 10 crore people in India now filing taxes, especially we started supporting all different kind of taxes on a platform, right? Including GST and TDS. Of course, it's a year-round affair, right? You file your income tax return once a year, but you pay your advance tax 4 times a year, right? You do your tax planning around the year. You want to make sure what your, you know, post-tax ROIs on your capital investments. So we are continuously innovating, investing into our platform where people come and interact with us more frequently. And which is another reason why we have recently launched something called Sandbox, because, you know, running Quick over the last 4 years, we realized that, you know, taxes are omnipresent. Wherever there is money exchanging hand, wherever there is payment happening, there is some form of tax component attached to it, right? So we realized that, you know, we can't always expect our users to come to our platform. We will have to go to them. Right. So if you're buying something off of Razorpay, or if you're buying something off of Amazon, or, you know, maybe you are doing salary from an HRMS platform, there will be a tax component attached to it. And which is what we are trying to solve with a Sandbox and kind of integrate into larger e-commerce ecosystem in India, where, you know, as they build and grow their businesses, we'll help them solve taxes using, you know, technology first approach. So we are continuously innovating in that direction.
Can you give some use cases of the sandboxes, and who are the kind of people and how are they using this?
No, absolutely. So, I mean, our thought process behind Sandbox, again, originated as we, you know, got funded by Rainmaker and started looking at Zerodha and the ecosystem that you guys have built closely, right? We were probably, Nitin, I think after Digio, we were the only second maybe platform outside capital market ecosystem that you guys invested in. Yes. We've seen all these great platforms built on Kite APIs. And somewhere along the line, that light bulb went off for us as well, that, you know, a lot of APIs that we were building for ourselves, other people needed that as well, right? So why not externalize that? So we started building it out on Quicko. Very recently, we have, you know, Quicko is more of a B2C use case where end users and small businesses come do their compliances. And Sandbox is this B2B platform where large enterprises and businesses can come solve, you know, either their tax compliance problems or their customers' tax compliance problems. So just to give you examples, we are integrating into e-commerce ecosystem in India. So for example, if you're Udaan, you are onboarding tens of thousands of sellers every day. Your e-commerce platform is as good as, you know, number of sellers and choices that customers have on your platform. So it's very important to have that healthy onboarding workflow, right? So Udaan uses our Tex KYC APIs to onboard sellers, but then also 40 to 50% of the sellers don't have GST registration. And what we learned in last 4 years is most tech-savvy businesses, when it came to, for some reason, tax compliances, were kind of delegating it to offline, right? Some offline partner or consultant or a service provider or a big four, whatever you want to call it. There was no reason for them to do it, except there was no technology solution. So we said, we're going to build out online journeys through Sandbox where, you know, somebody can go apply for GST registration online. And that gave them a lot of insights. They were able to integrate that within their workflow and track it. So that's just one example, right? We've been able to do the same with Zerodha, and which is primarily, Nitin, you invested into Quicko, right? Because a lot of young target audiences use Zerodha because of how you have built a technology first, you know, brokerage platform. And people operating with, you tell me oftentimes the stats, right? That 80% of traders generate 10% of volume and 10% of the traders generate the rest, right? So that target audience, a hefty tax compliance cost is a huge demotivator, right? That kicks them out of the market. So what we have done in partnership with Xerodha is, again, using Sendbox, build the seamless product journeys where you can bring your capital gains or your, intraday and FNO trades. A lot of time we get users having tens of thousands of trades. I mean, think about manually punching in that data into utilities or other platforms. So that's what customer has loved. That thought process of, a customer first approach has really paid off well for us. So we are partnering with a lot of wealth tech, investment tech platforms. On the other hand, we are also partnering with, banks and lending platform who need to make this important lending decision and where they need to, look at what your tax compliance history is, whether you've been regularly filing your income tax returns or GST returns, what incomes have you been reporting while filing those returns, so forth, so on. So we were very surprised. I mean, we have, a small startup who's building out a wealth tech platform using Sendbox, while we also have the largest e-commerce platform in India integrating onto Sendbox. So just the wide variety of use cases that we come across.
How many end users are you, today addressing?
So Quicko, Nitin, this year we helped 100,000 individual taxpayers do their tax compliances through us. On Sendbox, we are just building out. It was something that we thought would be nice to build, and it has since then turned out, a very important problem statement for us. So we have 100 plus, marquee customers. Some of the names I said, their use cases are very well documented on our website called sendbox.co.in. But our goal is to get to, 1,000 Sendbox SaaS subscription in 2021. So fingers crossed.
That's sweet. Is there a competition there, or are there other folks trying to do similar stuff?
No, absolutely. So I think the fundamental difference, right? The reason we built Sendbox is when we as developers went and looked for, API SaaS subscription platform, we couldn't find any. I mean, most of the API platforms in India are commodity platforms. They have commoditized APIs, and you get on this lengthy sales cycles where, based on who you are and how well funded you are, you will be quoted one time set of costs and, onboarding fees and things like that. One platform quoted us 10 lakh rupees onboarding costs. So that's something we wanted to break, which is why Sendbox is a self-served, self-onboarding platform. The primary motivation is, just like Kite APIs are backed by Kite products, similarly Sendbox APIs are backed by Quicko products, right? So that really helps us, because we are not a commodity API provider anymore. We are an enriched API platform where we can also build product journeys and user experiences, like something we have built for Xerodha, something we have built for a lot of banks. That has been a real differentiator.
And out of these 100,000 users, how many are traders, as in investors, traders?
A lot of them. So for us, for the longest amount of time, Nitin, we, first of all, in India, because government utilities are free, it's free to file income tax returns on government's website, there was always this pressure to offer the platform for free, right? Which is what most of the competition has done. We, on the other hand, charge our customers, right? We always felt that if we can't charge our customers, there's no point of building that product, right? Because a lot of our hard work, blood, sweat, and tears goes into building. We have gained a lot of knowledge and intellectual property over the last 4 years building Quicko. So I think capital market ecosystem is where we saw that, real problem statement, because everybody can upload their Form 16 and file income tax return. But there was no tangible alternative for somebody to, from their tax compliance platform, log in into their brokerage or log into their bank and, get this trove of data, which then that platform, tax compliance platform, would compute instantaneously and give you your P&L. So that has been a differentiator. So almost 70% of, target audience on Quicko has some relationship. They may be salaried in filing salary return, but they end up coming to us through, one of our broker relationship, whether it is Xerodha or others.
And what percentage of this is audit? I mean, for people who don't know, if you trade the markets and you trade futures and options or trade intraday, if the turnover is more than 5 crores, you need to file audit.
Right.
So, what percentage of this audience come under the audit criteria?
This is something we have. I mean, this is a common point of discussion every time you and I connect. And we always, right, felt that anybody who is participating in capital market ecosystem, all of those transactions are bank transactions, digital transactions. It's SEBI has a partnership with CBDT. All that data gets reported. There is no reason to put, you know, traders and, you know, investors in capital market space go through all this pain of getting their books of accounts audited. But I mean, that's the land of law, and we have to help users with that. So Nitin, we individually as a platform, we are not a chartered accountancy firm. We are not CA partners. So we don't perform audits. What we help people do is file income tax returns. And if there is audit applicability, of course, we use our algorithms and our technology know-how and our understanding of income tax law to, you know, recommend them whether tax audit is applicable or not and why is it applicable. And if they need help and if they ask for it, we connect them to, you know, chartered accountants who could help them accomplish that. But I mean, from data and my understanding, almost 30 to 35% traders who are, you know, either participating in intraday or derivative markets have audit applicable for one or the other reason. Primarily also because we have talked about this draconian rule of calculating absolute turnover, right? Because in derivatives, the turnover can add up very quickly.
So this year is the 10 crore, you know, announcement, the turnover being up to 10 crores for audit, that will probably help a lot, right? Doesn't it?
It does. And it will. Primarily, I think there are two rules to it, right? So A, it's linked to turnover. And second, it's linked to whether you are making profit or loss, right? So if your profits are less than 6%, then irrespective of what your turnover is, you again have to get your books of accounts audited. A lot of traders that we get, you know, have profits maybe less than 6% of their turnover. Because again, like I said, the turnover gets calculated in a very weird way, where it's very difficult to have more than 6% profit, right?
Absolutely. No, I mean, we've been representing this at multiple places. Unfortunately, nothing has come through till now. The other thing in this budget was around this pre-filled ITR forms with capital gains, right? As in, how do you envision that's going to be executed? Because it's that capital gain computation is such a complex computation, especially when you have to do FIFO, you have to worry about corporate actions, you know, mergers and all of that. So, how do you envision they will execute that? As in, have you thought about that?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's fundamental to our business, right? That's one of the use cases we solve on our problem, on our platform. And we are very excited about it, Nitin. I mean, if that happens, and if income tax return is only, you know, verify and click on submit button, no one would be more happy than us, right? Because that we felt that that was a pain point and that was a problem statement, which is what we set out to solve. And if government is going in that direction, we are very happy. We'll somehow figure out a way where we can, you know, there are still so many people who want to treat their capital gains as business profession income, or somebody who has, you know, sold a property. There are so many other use cases that PICO can still add value. But I think it's something that finance minister said from the floor of, you know, Lok Sabha. So I would take it very seriously. We have seen some shortcomings in terms of what income tax department has been able to produce historically, right? For example, simple example is, SEBI only gets data that gets reported by exchanges, right? There are a lot of downstream expenses, right? There are broker charges and other expenses, which are a very important component to reduce your tax liability, right? So even if you pre-fill capital gains based on what data SEBI reports, you're still going to miss out a lot of tax savings, right? So that's a very important problem statement that we see. But I think in general, what is happening is, with Aadhaar now getting linked to all the different, data entities, increasingly income tax department can reconcile that data and produce it in your income tax returns.
So, but for you as Quico, you know, kind of building this capital gains thing, right? I mean, could you tomorrow assume you're, you know, somehow finance ministry contacts you and outsources this calculation of capital gains for, you know, 1 crore Indians to you guys, right? So you will get data from the depositories, you'll get it from exchanges. You'll have to somehow compute capital gains. You think that's doable as a project? As in, because I'm still wondering how because it's a really complex. You could be wrong in so many different ways, right? As in,
no, absolutely, absolutely. So your compute engine can be as accurate as your input data, and we see so many discrepancies, right? And data, especially in capital market space, there's so many varieties of corporate actions that is very difficult to reconcile, right? People moving their portfolio from one platform to other platform only tells one side of the story. So there are all these problem statements. But Nitin, one thing that we do really well is now we, compute kind of trade PNL on more than, 100 million trades as we partner with a lot of different brokers. And that data quickly adds up, right? Because, Zerodha does a significant portion of, turnover on exchanges every day. And we get that volume of data come to us when we need to compute the trade PNL. So that's something we have increasingly gotten better and better because, in golden quadrant where Zerodha falls, we've also been able to take that use case and, kind of push the envelope and brokerage industry in general, right? So a lot of Zerodha customers have gone and asked their brokers to, build better partnerships and deeper integrations and product journeys like Zerodha has with Quicko. We now have, set up data specifications and standards as to how brokers should be providing trade PNL data to a tax compliance platform, whether they do it through us or some other platform. That's irrelevant. The problem statement is how can we help capital market investors and traders, do it in a cost efficient manner.
I mean, one of those things that you'd be interested to know is, SEBI has got this committee going where they want to standardize this kind of data that every broker offers. You know, what we offer at, say, Zerodha should be something that's offered by every single broker, right? Like machine readable and et cetera. So it makes easier, hopefully it'll make easier for someone like you to integrate with all the brokers out there, right? So the other thing, which, this is just a overall taxation in general kind of topic. What do you think government can do as in to increase tax compliance in this country? As in, because at the end, I think last year, there were 6 crore Indians who filed income tax returns. How does someone do it?
So, Nitin, that also brings up a very interesting anecdote, right? Nitin always says that Zerodha spends zero on paid marketing. I mean, we say the same thing as well, except government does the paid marketing for us, right? You see all those text bureau, text file karo ads in theaters and radio stations. What we have seen over the last 4 or 5 years running Quicko, Nathan, is the number of text filers are disproportionately low, right? And we are talking about filers, we are not talking about taxpayers. The number of taxpayers is much lower than number of people who file income tax returns. But at the same time, we have seen that number grow at a steady pace. When we started, there were about 3.5 crore people filing income tax returns. This year, that number would be hitting somewhere around 7 crore, right? So there is a steady increase of about 10 to 12% year over year. I think fundamentally the new regime, that's why I was really excited about the new regime. But for some reason, it felt like a weak poker hand, right? Where you wanted to go all in, but you couldn't gather the courage. So finance minister left, choice for the taxpayer, and which caused a lot of confusion. But I think historically, tax law is an archaic law. There have been so many amendments made to it. A lot of time, we know India is, democracy. There are so many constituencies to keep happy. So one year you have a deduction for salary, the next year you have something for business people, right? So the old tax code has become so complicated, and which is why it was very important, right? Because in West, there's this burning debate that, you need to have broader tax base and lower tax rate, right? You need to have a very simple tax code. And I think for starters, new regime offers that. It also alters very important behavior, Nitin, that I see in, wealth tech, investor tech ecosystem, that ELSS is the hottest category when it comes to, investments. And it's really a kind of wrong end to look at, right? When you want to do wealth creation, I mean, just saving taxes cannot be an objective, right? So what new regime does is it gives more freedom to individual taxpayer where they can decide what schemes they want to invest in, whether they want to do more equity, take more risk, or be more risk tolerant. So I think that would really help if we just had one single tax regime, which was new regime, and then people can choose and decide what they wanted to invest in.
Got it. Who are these people who are not filing returns right now? I mean, these are more self-employed and people employed in smaller companies, is it? I mean, because the ones who are working in a certain company and over, they can't really get away from it.
Right.
In certain size and over, right? So,
right.
How big is that audience that potentially can file returns, you think? As in, right. If right now there are 7 crore Indians, how much more are there in India who can potentially file income tax returns?
Right. No, so there's this burning debate, right, that 72% of women are part of labor workforce in China, while less than 15% of women are labor, and that's 50% of population in India, right? So that's one huge target constituency. The other thing that we see is increasingly, because there is a TDS on salary, we see more and more salaried people filing income tax return because their TDS gets deducted by employer, gets deposited. And we see fewer and fewer business people filing returns. So just to throw some stats out at you, out of 7 crore, about 3.5 crore are salaried returns. It's almost 50% of total income tax returns filed in India. While less than 70, 80 lakh business returns get filed. Right. Though there are some, behavior demonetization was, you can debate the effectivity and efficacy of demonetization. But one good thing it did was, it kind of brought a lot of people into mainstream digital payments ecosystem, which, kind of forced them to report their incomes and file their income tax returns. But at the same time, you and I, we know, right, because India is even today, huge part of our GDP is unorganized. A lot of cash transactions happening. So I think that's the fundamental contributor. But at the same time, it would be unrealistic to expect 70 crore Indians to file income tax return, right? The Indian labor workforce is about 30 crore people. So anybody who is earning taxable income should be filing income tax return. What we think is about 15 to 20 crore is where, total number of Indians, because in US, 45% of labor workforce files income tax return. So if you do the math,
right.
That's how many people should be filing returns in India.
Got it. So that means the market size can grow 10% year on year for a long time then, which is good for you guys then.
Yes, absolutely. As long as government does not, Subraman Swamy doesn't come in and abolish Income Tax Act.
What's your take on that though? What if they say no personal income taxes?
Right. So I think with all due respect, right, there's a fundamental flaw with that thought process. When you do a bank transaction tax, you are only taxing people who are anyhow in the legitimate economy, right, who are doing digital transaction. What about everybody who where money gets exchanges hands in a cash mode, right? What do you do with that? There's no bank transaction tax happening there. So it leaves out a large part of economy out of tax regime. And I think the way to build a sustainable tax regime is everybody does their bit, right? There should be a progressive tax regime like we have here in India, like Europe has it, where if you earn more, you pay more in taxes, so forth, so on. But I don't think there's, of course, the preparation and filing of income tax return could be drastically simplified. And that should be all our goal, right? But you could, and our argument, you can never abolish Income Tax Act, right?
Got it. Yes. So last few questions. So firstly, what have been your learnings? Firstly, you worked in the US for so long, and then you came to a city like Ahmedabad, which is not really known for a startup ecosystem, and built, I think, a really, really cool startup, because I think your product... As just so, right from the day one I saw Quico, just the way your landing page was, very clearly explain what you're trying to do, etc. Right. So and you just gotten better with time. Right. So what have been some of your learnings in this journey in the last 10, 15 years?
No, absolutely. I mean, you bring up some very, burning points, and hopefully I'll be able to follow up with few questions where we can learn from you. But I am always very transparent, right? First few years were very difficult. Being a fintech platform out of tier 2 city, not having access to talent, investors, to even customers. I have this funny anecdote where every time I would send a BD email out of Ahmedabad office, nobody would respond to it. And for some reason, when I'm in Bangalore and send that email, people would respond back to it. I don't know if there's any logic to it, but it's just right. Being from that tier two ecosystem, there are only handful startups that you can name out of Ahmedabad. I hope there are more startups happening here. I hope there's better infrastructure, better resources accessible to startups in tier two cities, not just Ahmedabad, all over India. Right. So I think for us, that pivot point was, Rain Matter investing. That really changed. Right. Whenever I talk to any of my fellow Rain Matter co-founders, that has been the motivation. Right. I might be buttering it up a little bit, but you are one of those consequential founders. Right. And your values and the business that you guys have built. It's just such a motivator. And where else does it happen where somebody gives you money and says, go serve this first 100,000 customers, right? So that's a too good a deal to, refuse. And which is why we were really excited when, Rain Matter, that validation was very important for us. And since then, we haven't looked back. I mean, most of the problem statements we have faced since then are related to growth and scale, right? How do we help more taxpayers? How do we go replicate this with other partners? How do we explore more categories, right, where we can apply the same thought process, the technology first approach, so forth, so on, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I kind of bring you back to that 30 people tech team, and we have a common this joke here that we are Sparta, right? Just like you said, those superhuman efforts. So how do you not let your team burn out, Nitin? I mean, how do you keep them motivated? Especially at your stage where you have achieved, right, all the possible validation that there are, how do you still keep the team motivated?
See, the thing is, I think one of the reasons for this burnout, right, is that when there is undue pressure on folks to go get something, right, when you put these time constraints or you put these deadlines, what might sound a little weird is we have never had such a timeline for anyone, right? As in, there has never been a revenue or a growth target to anyone in the office. A sales team never works on any kind of, like these revenue numbers, right? Get this much revenue. So it's a very laid back kind of.
So, I mean, same with Rain Matter, right? We never felt that pressure from you guys.
The thing is, as in, what is it that you're doing, what you're doing for is a question to ask, right? Okay. So this Rain Matter, when we, when we invested, I don't think we have ever come back to you ask, what have you done with the money, right? Because the idea for us with all those investments we did was, can this startup create an impact, right? As in, can it go help X number of people? And if you keep doing that, after some period of time, you'll automatically become a big business. Right. Right? Like personally, in my head, right, I'm not a believer of setting targets and chasing it down, right? So right. I am one of those guys who says, do whatever you can, the best you can. And if you're at the right place, right time, good things will happen to you, right? I mean, you need some little bit of luck as well, right? So, and the idea is, make sure if you meet good folks on the way, you have a good relationship. So, you're all, because keeping the right, being around with the right kind of folks is also extremely important, right? So, that's been my attitude to life. And which means that even though we've had some really, really tough times, right? Because, if our platform's down for 5 minutes, I maybe get like a zillion emails saying, cheat, con, fraud. So, right? When you're doing all of this with no expectation, etc., in your mind, I'm almost pushed to edges every time something like that happens. But what has that meant is that the team is generally working without any pressure, right? Yeah. And if you can make working fun, you really don't burn out, right? It's very tough to. At different stages, it is different. So the last 2-3 years, we as a business have been a little easy. So we are not, I'm not putting, if you look at our history as a business, right, between 2015 to 2017, I used to make a product announcement even before any planning, right? I'll come and say, you know what, let me announce this. Then I'll go and find a way to make it happen. And then we used to push each other a little to make it happen. But then I realized that that attitude is maybe a little, can burn out. I used to, I think one of the best things I've done in this journey is stay away from the tech team. Until 2016, 17, early 17, I used to somehow think, I have no tech knowledge, right? But I used to somehow think that if I am somehow around them all the time, I will be able to push them to do something, right? And eventually, I and Kailash had this conversation, and he said, dude, you know, you're actually slowing things down. And because I used to be like, you know, let's do this and let's do that and just take people between different projects. So I actually almost walked out of the tech team. So I don't interact with them like the way I used to before. And I think that was one of the best things I've done in my journey, which is to just not interfere in something that you don't understand.
I think there was a follow-up question there. So did you ever feel handicapped? A lot of people have this thought process. A lot of young entrepreneurs, students reach out to me as well as to, do I have to be from technology background to build a startup, right? Because technology plays such an important role. Did you ever feel handicapped in that sense? And what would you tell to those people, right, who feel that if you are not a technology guy, you can't build a startup? Because you are a living example of that. We see Brian Chesky running Airbnb, no technology background. So
I think it's about, personally, I've played sports through my life. And I believe that you need to first build core competency in something.
Right.
The thing is, if you're a technologist, you're someone who can build great products, you're an outlier, right? You could potentially go solve any, I keep telling to Kailash, saying that, dude, you could do or build anything. Right. I can only build a broken business. I can't build anything else. If you're not in today's world, if you're not a technologist, I think you need to go build core competency in something. Right. So if you have a business idea, go work in a similar business or in that industry, build some core competencies, because otherwise you will feel handicapped, right? Because if you're going to just take a random idea in a coffee shop and no idea of how you're going to solve it, right, and no technology skills, I mean, of course, it's going to be a handicap. There is no two ways about it. So, they say, right? You need to first sharpen the axe before you go chopping wood. So you need to build some kind of a core competence. And to be very honest, this might sound funny. I tried to learn programming. That's how stupid it was. After Zerodha started, right? Because the first...
Now you have made this public announcement. Every time there is some glitch, people are going to come and ask, was Nitin involved in it in some way?
So I tried learning, but it was just, I was too old to even pick up, and there were too many distractions to pick it up. So I'd say core competency is required. Coming back to you now, what are your future plans? As in, what's lined up for Quicko? Sandbox is your next big play, but is there something else that we don't know about yet?
You would be the first one. That email will drop in your inbox. Nathan, right now we are absolutely focused on Quicko and Sandbox. I think it's one of those, unfinished business. We are at a very young stage as a startup, right? We have very strong traction. Our customers love our product. They want to pay for it. They go talk about it. I think which is one thing we really get amazed by, Zerodha and the relationship that you guys have built with your customer, where they are so vocal about, all the positives and sometimes the negatives, of course, that's part and parcel of it. And that ecosystem play, that right, building Varsity was just completely out of the box. I mean, nobody in India, no wealth tech, investment tech, brokerage platform has built anything remotely close to it. Knowing that talent existed with Karthik and, backing him and building Varsity. So we believe in the same thought process, right? We are continuously building, we think ecosystem is the way to go, because our customers don't only come to us with an objective of transacting, but they also need help around the year. So, building a great content platform in Learn and building a great newsletter and building just like Trading Q&A, we recently launched a discourse channel. I hope you're not going to come back and ask me rename it from Text Q&A to something else. That ecosystem play is very important. So we are continuously investing in platform, building bigger and better products. We are also, like I said, I mean, with Sendbox, a lot of people ask me, does Sendbox distract us from doing QuickCore, right? Because it's a logical thing to ask. We are about 35 people team right now. So you can only do so many things with that kind of team, right? The answer is absolutely no. Whenever a large business onboards on Sendbox as a B2B use case, the eventual journey is they want to help their customers, right? So there's always that B2B2C play where they want to solve tax compliance in a similar fashion for their customers, whether it is, Udaan solving it for their sellers or Razorpay solving it for their merchants. Zerodha are doing it for the investors, traders, target audience. So that's that. It has really helped Quico push the product boundaries where we can help on multiple use cases, multiple touch points, more engagement, so on. So we're gonna continue to build Quico. Hopefully, we'll make you proud. And the products.
No, you're already. I mean, we are super proud about what you've done because I get a lot of guys reaching out every once in a while saying thanks a lot for Quico integration. So, feels very happy and So finally, what is you've built a business from a small town. So what is your advice to budding entrepreneurs in tier 2, tier 3 cities? As in what have been your learnings which you want to.
Right. I think the only handicap I found, Nitin, was, being introvert. I don't think there is any challenge in building a business out of tier two city. As long as you have the right skill set, you have the right idea, you have the right team, you can execute it from anywhere. And there are so many examples of it. The only thing that I would, tell entrepreneurs coming out of tier two, tier three cities is you have to be that much more proactive in reaching out, whether it is, your target audiences, because you have to have a very loud voice, right? You have to, go figure out, right? Rather, talking to people like Nathan and, talking to other entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs would help you reach out to the target audiences. So I think that is one fundamental thing that I feel entrepreneurs coming from non-technology hubs need to specially focus on as to how do you get that message across, rather whether it is your products, your team, your platform, right? Whatever is that you are trying to build. So that's something I learned hard way. I think you were the, now that I often talk about, we never sent a pitch deck to an investor. Even the way Rain Matter came to us was, some of your guys filed returns through us and they came back and talked to you about it. And I got a call from Soam and later we got on a call with you and you asked me to come fly to Bangalore. Let's have a chat. And most of that conversation was not around, what are your KPIs and how many customers do you have? Because we were just starting out and we were looking to build a business. There's no way we were able to, justify that. But you focused on product and, what problems we wanted to solve and how were we different from, anybody else. You asked all the right questions. And I don't particularly feel challenged running startup out of Ahmedabad. I'm very proud of it. I often tell people that we want to build a quintessential Ahmedabad startup. Nice. I think your validation has really helped us in kind of proving that.
Thanks, Vishwajit. Thanks a lot for doing this. And hopefully we can do another update next year when Sandbox is much, much bigger than what it is today.
So. No, fingers crossed. 2020 was a weird year with coronavirus and all the limitations that it brought. So we are really looking forward to 2021. I mean, Zerodha had a bumper of a year. And we were fortunately, we're also in that sweet corner where, people were going from offline to online. But in general, let's hope this trend continues and more people adopt to online products, whether it is ours or somebody else's. I think it's a much better value proposition And thank you very much for doing this. Like I said in the beginning, I mean, we need to learn a lot more from you. So hopefully I'll get a chance to, you know, ask a few more questions next time when we connect.
Absolutely. Look forward. Cheers. Thanks.
Too much. Cheers. Yeah.